Today is Wednesday, March 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the latest on where things stand with the global coronavirus outbreak.
We can't be doing the kinds of things we were doing a few months ago.
The industry that's suffering some of the biggest hits from the novel coronavirus. Also ahead, a U.S. commander says the Al-Shabaab network is growing in parts of Africa. It's all on today's International Edition. With more nations taking action and more cases of the novel coronavirus continuing to be reported, new quarantines, cancellations, and warnings on how to stay healthy continue. In the United States, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases director, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says all Americans need to take precautions to avoid contracting the coronavirus.
We would like the country to realize that as a nation, we can't be doing the kinds of things we were doing a few months ago, that it doesn't matter if you're in a state that has no cases or one case. You have to start taking seriously what you can do now.
In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo says schools and other large gathering places will be shut down for 2 weeks in a containment area centered in New Rochelle. He's sending National Guard troops to scrub surfaces and deliver food in and around the New York City suburb that's now at the center of the nation's biggest known cluster of coronavirus cases.
It is a dramatic action, but it is the largest cluster in the country. And this is literally a matter of life and death.
Italian authorities say the number of coronavirus infections in that country has topped the 10,000 mark. The European Union leaders are vowing to stand united against the coronavirus that is ravaging their member country of Italy. EU leaders held an emergency meeting, not in person, but on video conference overnight, to coordinate their response to the outbreak. Italians are facing travel restrictions inside and outside the country, which is posing economic issues in a region used to free movement and open borders. Joining us is retired European Union Commissioner Michael Lee, who is in hard-hit Italy. He joins and heads the Johns Hopkins University SAIS Masters in European Public Policy in Bologna. Thank you so much for being with us. I know you are in Italy under quarantine. How are people there dealing with this unprecedented lockdown there?
It's much quieter than it would be normally. There are many fewer people on the street. Many people are concerned about the virus, but they're following the government suggestions very conscientiously. People are keeping a safe distance from each other. People don't enter shops as long as there are more than two or three people ahead of them that wait in the street so they can keep the 6 feet distance from the next person that has been recommended. And on the whole, they're taking it very calmly and they're behaving very considerately towards each other.
So it doesn't seem like people are panicking or clearing out the shelves in stores?
There was a brief moment like that 10 days ago when the virus first began to spread. People did go to supermarkets and start loading up on supplies, but that was very short-lived. And since then, they've been behaving calmly on the whole.
So are people literally not allowed to leave the country, the area? How does that work? How confined are people?
The Prime Minister summed up the government decree by saying that it really means stay at home. So the basic rule is that people should stay at home unless they have a good reason for going out. A good reason could include going to work, going to the doctor, some kind of unavoidable travel. You need to stay within the boundaries of your own municipality. And if you cross boundaries to another municipality, you have to be ready to explain to a police officer why.
Is that preventing people from being able to work? And if so, how is that impacting their own financial well-being?
Many people can't work or are working from home. Companies have been encouraged to permit online work, and many people are taking advantage of that. But these are people who have children at home, the schools are closed, the universities are closed, and you can't always focus on your work with kids around. Many small companies will find themselves in difficulty. So the kind of economic measures that the government is taking are intended to provide relief to individuals and to companies that find themselves in difficulty. For example, delaying tax payments or delaying mortgage repayments. These are among the kind of measures that the government is taking.
I understand there was a big EU member state met for a big emergency conference to try to coordinate. Obviously, the EU is a partnership, and so I would imagine coordination would be extremely important.
You chose the right word in saying coordination, because the European Union has little legal responsibility for health questions, which are mainly still the responsibility of the member state. Today's meeting between the 27 heads of government, their main message was that the EU is coordinating a position, that Europe is seeking to respond together to the crises, that member states who find themselves in particular difficulty can count on the support of the others. And the meeting also focused on some specific issues like trade in medical equipment, particularly masks and respiratory equipment.
Are they prepared for something of this magnitude with supplies, with enough tests for this virus, with enough hospital beds, if it should, in fact, infiltrate the hospitals themselves?
Exactly. These are among the risks. And healthcare provision in Europe is universal. Pretty much everybody in European Union countries is covered. So that's not the main issue. The main issue is the shortage of places in intensive care units, because this virus attacks the respiratory system, particularly of elderly people, and, for example, the number of calls to emergency services.
Europe is known for its free movement of open borders, and it's a philosophy, it's a way of life. Trains, you can get to another country in an hour or less in some places. Do you expect that other European Union members will be ultimately taking the same aggressive steps that Italy has taken, given how, you know, no matter how much you try to contain something, it's so interconnected?
I think most epidemiologists who have looked at this think that other major European countries like Germany, France, and Spain are between 10 and 15 days behind where Italy is now, both in terms of development of the virus and the response to it. So they are all going to be in a rather similar situation before long. And they are trying to take strenuous measures now to limit the expansion of the epidemic.
All right, that's retired European Union Commissioner Michael Lee. We thank you so much. U.S. President Donald Trump attempted to offer reassurance to nervous Americans Tuesday as the number of cases of the novel coronavirus rose into the thousands across the nation.
We just had a meeting on stimulus, and you'll be hearing about it soon, but it was a great meeting. There's great unity within the Republican Party.
But the administration is at odds with congressional Democrats, who say Trump's plans to lessen the economic fallout of the crisis will not help the hardest-hit American workers. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson joins us from Capitol Hill to talk about the increasing level of concern from lawmakers.
So he came up to the weekly Senate Republicans luncheon to discuss this proposed tax cut. It would theoretically provide an economic stimulus, considering that already we're seeing the impacts of the coronavirus across the travel industry. We're also hearing from a lot of workers in the United States who are concerned that they're going to have to take sick leave without pay. And of course, you know, people are stopping their travel, they're stopping buying things. All of this could potentially cause serious consequences for the American economy. So what President Trump is proposing is that he has a tax cut that would run until just after the November election, which of course is angering a lot of congressional Democrats who say that this is just a ploy to boost his polling numbers and put him over in the election against Democrats, and not really taking into consideration what the American people need during this crisis.
So what is Congress saying?
Well, first of all, they have few details to work on. The coronavirus White House task force briefed reporters, and they were still not really able to say how they would pay for that tax cut. the exact details of what it would do. So really, Democrats are waiting to see the details before they specifically criticize it. They're already offering their own plans for what they think the White House should do. They think that the White House should cover paid sick leave for Americans who don't have that availability at their jobs. Of course, here in the United States, that is a common experience for many workers. They're also talking about going after some insurance companies who may be trying to take advantage of this crisis and charging or using junk insurance plans to take advantage of people. They say those are the real changes that will help Americans as they go through this.
So where do things go from here? Is this right now just merely a proposal by the president?
It's merely a proposal. And remember that the U.S. Congress, at least the U.S. House, only has 2 full days left in session this week. And then they go on a recess for the next 10 days. And really, there was already discussion up here on Capitol Hill about the wisdom of having all of these members of Congress fly in from different parts of the country, many of those parts of the country that are infected, and then all gathering together here and doing exactly what health officials are warning people not to do, which is to be packed in near each other and spreading the virus. So I would be very surprised to see if the Congress came back into session after that 10-day recess. That means that whatever President Trump proposes would have to wait.
All right, that is VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson. The U.S. travel industry, which annually generates more than $1.6 trillion in economic output and is expected to suffer substantially because of the coronavirus outbreak, is one of the major industries feeling the pain. More and more events, conferences, concerts, and travel plans are being canceled. Not since the September 11th terrorist attacks has the travel industry been hit so hard. Joining us to talk about it is Pauline Frommer, editorial director from Frommers.com and the Frommer Travel Guides. This could be for the travel and tourism industry. Given this will impact hotels, flights, taxis, and restaurants, actually, I was going to say, how bad could this be?
Not only is travel and tourism linked to coronavirus, it's deeply linked to the economy. By some estimates, 1 out of every 11 people on the planet Earth work in travel or tourism some way. So this is going to be a big, big deal, not just for travelers and not just for people in the travel industry, but for everybody.
Right. And when you think of travel, we think of vacations, but, you know, think about all the businesses that have people that have to travel all over the place for work. And everybody seems to have just put all of that to a stop, which has a ripple effect, I would imagine, on airlines and taxis and hotels.
Yeah, there's people who work for the airlines, people who work for the trains, people who work at restaurants that mostly get tourists, people who work in museums and amusement parks. I could go on and on, but people don't realize how big a sector travel and tourism are. We keep a lot of people busy and solvent, and it's very scary what's happening to this industry. It's obviously understandable. We don't want to spread a terrible disease, but I, for one, am hoping that once this passes, things can bounce back.
How are people in your industry dealing with this? Are they taking any kind of steps to think ahead of this?
The industry is a huge one, so it really depends on what sector you're looking at. If you're looking at the airlines, a lot of them have announced that they are cutting back dramatically on flights so that they can spend less money in the short term. So United has announced that they are cutting back on 20% of their international flights, 10% domestic, and we're seeing similar numbers from all of those big players. Nobody knows quite what will happen to the cruise industry, because this has been a really big black eye for that industry, especially because the State Department just a couple of days ago came out and said, we are suggesting that Americans don't travel on cruise ships, particularly those who are elderly or who have underlying conditions. And it's gotten so bad that even those cruise ships that don't have any coronavirus on them are being turned away from ports because the activity of cruising is now being linked to the spread of disease, sadly enough.
It's hard to overcome something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a long time for that part of the industry to recover.
And I think a lot of people just don't know what to do, whether they should even continue domestic travel plans within their own country or particularly here in the U.S.
Because everything seems so uncertain right now, I think a lot of people are canceling all travel. Frankly, the planes are empty right now. Most people are getting whole rows to themselves because people are so nervous about traveling. And one of the advice pieces that's being given in the travel industry is, if you want to get a great deal, you book now. Because something that most actors in the travel industry are doing is they're throwing incredible sales and they're making ironclad money-back guarantees that if you're not comfortable traveling 10 days before, 5 days before, 48 hours before, it all depends on the company, they will give you your money back, no questions asked. So buying a deal now, buying travel, I think is pretty risk-free, and you'll get an incredible price.
People always looking for deals, and usually the planes are crowded. I guess if there's a bright side, that might be it.
That's absolutely it. And, you know, to me, travel is such a wonderful part of life. It's the best form of education. It shows you who you are as a person outside of your daily life. I find it a soul-expanding experience, and it's been breaking my heart that right now so many people feel it's too dangerous to do. And they may be right. You know, I don't want to push anybody to travel. I feel like when I talk about the positives of travel, I'm like Typhoid Mary. But I think this will blow over. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. But as someone who's lived through SARS and saw what that did to travel, and after 9/11 for a good year, a good percentage of the population was terrified of getting on a plane. I'm hoping that this will also finish and allow us to get back to our usual lives.
All right. That's Pauline Frommer, editorial director for Frommers.com and the Frommer Travel Guides. Joe Biden's path to the Democratic presidential nomination widened significantly Tuesday, with commanding victories in Mississippi, Missouri, and Michigan, a state that has rival Bernie Sanders won 4 years ago. Biden and Sanders canceled big rallies Tuesday night due to concerns over the coronavirus, but Biden did address supporters from the Philadelphia Constitution Center. In a soft tone, he sent a message that was clearly aimed not at Sanders, but the current president.
It is my hope that the days of divisiveness will soon be over. We're a decent, brave, resilient people. We are better than this moment we're in. We just need to remember who we are. This is the United States of America. There's not a single thing we cannot do if we do it together.
Biden's momentum accelerated as he broadened his delegate lead over Sanders with a series of decisive victories.
Donald Trump's America First policies made America alone. You know, in the fight against climate change, we have to rally the rest of the world to act, and act now. Rejoin the Paris Climate Accord on day one. Make it clear to our allies that we'll honor our commitments, that our word can be trusted.
The former vice president's solid win in Michigan came in a state Sanders was depending on both to bolster his case going forward and for the practical delegate math involved. He came into the day about 96 delegates behind Biden, and Michigan was his best shot at preventing that lead from getting any wider. The results created an increasingly steep climb for Biden. In other world news, we are following at VOA. Reuters is reporting Afghan President Ashraf Ghani is set to release 1,500 Taliban prisoners in the coming days to pave the way for direct talks aimed at ending the 18-year-long war in Afghanistan. The two-page decree reportedly says all released Taliban prisoners will have to provide a written guarantee that they will not return to the battlefield. Venezuelan riot police fired tear gas Tuesday to break up a demonstration in Caracas called by opposition leader Juan Guaido, as he seeks to ramp up demands for elections to replace leftist President Nicolas Maduro. Riot police moved in quickly to break up the demonstration soon after thousands of protesters began marching toward the National Assembly building. Guaido, recognized as interim president by more than 50 countries, including the U.S., has been seeking to revive mass protests against Maduro, which have largely fizzled out since spiking early last spring. And belief in witchcraft is hampering advocates' efforts to eradicate female genital mutilation in Guinea, where almost all girls have been circumcised. Guinea is estimated to have the second highest prevalence globally after Somalia. You can find expanded coverage of these stories and many more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. And just ahead on International Edition, on this Women's History Month, a camp in India giving girls the chance for a future of their choice.
I will only marry into a family that makes no demands. I will even turn down a proposal from a well-to-do home. Dowry should not be given or taken.
This is VOA. Well, among the many problems facing the African nation of Somalia, worrisome news from the AFRICOM commander on terror group Al-Shabaab. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb sat down with General Stephen Townsend, who says the threat has increased since he started as AFRICOM chief just 8 months ago.
So compare the threats of Islamic State in Iraq and Syria now and Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Is one greater than the other, do you think, or should we be putting more focus on Al-Shabaab right now?
I won't compare the threat of Islamic State in Iraq and Syria today because I don't follow it daily. I would tell you that the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria in 2016, 2017, when I was living it all day, every day, was significantly higher than Al-Shabaab is today. Now, I think what you've seen a diminution of the threat in Iraq and Syria. That said, we lost two American service members there, I think yesterday or the day before. So it's still a dangerous place, and Iraq and ISIS is still there. ISIS and Al-Qaeda both exist on the African continent. Al-Shabaab is an arm of Al-Qaeda. So they are the largest and most kinetically active arm of Al-Qaeda. And they also have an external operations capability, which we saw play out at Manda Bay, Kenya, on the 5th of January. We also know there's ongoing threats to attack embassies and gatherings of people outside the confines of the territorial boundaries of Somalia. So there's an external operations threat that exists in the region, the broader region today, and they aspire to attack Americans wherever they find us, and to include the homeland. They aspire to that. I don't know if they have the capability to do that today, but if we let off of them for 1 minute, they will get that capability quickly.
If we assume, really quick, just to follow, the strikes went down because the threat went down in Iraq and Syria, the strikes have gone up in Somalia, should we increase the, should we kind of infer that the Al-Shabaab threat has increased, as, and that's why we're conducting more strikes?
So I've only been dealing with this problem now, this problem set here, Al-Shabaab, for about 8 months. I would say that the threat has been higher in the last few months than it was 8 months ago when I first got to AFRICOM. That's exactly why you've seen this increase in strike activity.
All right, that's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb in an interview with AFRICOM Commander General Stephen Townsend. The environmental group Fridays for Future says it's canceling planned demonstrations in Germany at the end of the week because of the coronavirus outbreak. The group has become a powerful voice in the youth movement, demanding world leaders take action to tackle climate change. And despite all the focus on COVID-19, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the new coronavirus is a temporary problem, but global climate change is a crisis that's not going away as the planet's warming accelerates.
One thing is a disease that we all expect to be temporary, and its impacts we also expect to be temporary. The other thing is climate change, which has been there for many years and which will remain with us for decades and require constant action.
Last year was the second warmest on record, according to a new report by the World Meteorological Organization, with the past decade the hottest in human history. You're listening to International Edition. We will be back in a moment.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, in a district in India where female literacy rates are half the national average, a group of girls who made it to college despite facing odds in their villages is spearheading a campaign to ensure more girls go to school. Anjana Pashrika visited Pipaka Village in a district in northern India to learn more about the initiative.
These girls gather every Sunday on a mission to talk to neighbors and friends in the Muslim-dominated new district about why their daughters drop out of school. The reasons are always the same.
I had to help my mother look after my younger brothers and sisters and do housework, and there was no middle school here.
The group of young girls advises Wazima that she can resume her studies and persuade her mother to keep her younger daughter at school. They allay concerns that educated girls will marry educated men who demand a bigger dowry, a challenge for low-income families. Arastoon, a postgraduate student in history, points out her studies have given her the confidence to stand on her own feet.
I will only marry into a family that makes no demands. I will even turn down a proposal from a well-to-do home. Dowry should not be given or taken.
The Selfie with Daughter Foundation, the non-profit spearheading the campaign to empower women in these villages, hopes the handful of local girls who made it to college, overcoming deep-seated patriarchal attitudes, will become game changers.
Here, women are victims of many social evils. The voices that can end this treatment should be that of their own daughters, rather than that of people who come from outside.
That is why nursing student Rizwana Khan begins her campaign from her own home, persuading her extended family to educate their daughters. She tells these women that qualified girls could be a boon for villages where women cannot interact with male lawyers, be taught by male teachers, or get treated by male doctors.
They don't want to educate their daughters, but if women are ill, they want a lady doctor. My father wanted me to provide health education.
Shehnaz Bano wants to teach in a local school.
I tell them that if you don't educate your daughters, how will schools employ female teachers?
For some, the big challenge is to change mindsets.
Here, men think that women should only do housework and give birth to children. We have to change this mindset. If we have equality under the law, how can society discriminate on basis of gender? We have to end this.
Some have been inspired. This mother wants to educate her three daughters.
The whole day, all I do is slog, either with animals, sweep, cook, wash, or fetch firewood. If I had studied, I would have been saved from this drudgery.
The battle to get more girls into school will be slow, but it has begun. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New India.
The popular TV shows Jeopardy! And Wheel of Fortune will be taping without studio audiences this week out of concern for the new coronavirus. AP correspondent Margie Saraletta reports.
A person close to the shows Jeopardy! And Wheel of Fortune tells the Associated Press that upcoming shows will be taped at a studio outside Los Angeles with no audience. It's out of an abundance of caution in light of the spread of the new coronavirus. The show tapes months in advance, so viewers will probably not notice immediately. Last week, CBS announced it was suspending production of The Amazing Race because of the outbreak. For most people, the new coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms like a fever or cough, and the vast majority recover. I'm Archie Zaraletta.
And you've been listening to International Edition. That's it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Kevin Fowler, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.